afternoon. This is Rob. Who's on?
Hey, Rob. It's Rob and Sean.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We are doing really well.
How are you?
Great. Great. Thank you.
How's your year wrapping up?
Good. 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 We're doing some work with Touchstone, which is a mutual fund company. I don't know if you know them, out of Cincinnati,
yeah.
Ohio. Good guys, and they get it. I've never worked, I always thought they'd get it. I always thought these mutual fund companies would get it, but none of them have actually ever gotten it. They support you for a while, and then they go on and get busy and sell funds, right? And these guys...
Exactly.
These guys are actually going to become coaches and actually do this. I mean, I don't think they'll ever coach, like I do. But what they can do is tremendous follow-up and, help with the technology, the scheduler, and help with the, the pipeline tool we've talked about.
Yep.
If they got really proficient at that, it could be such a big help to you guys. There's just a lot of things they can do, to be my guy on the ground, to come and see you versus me. And if they're involved and listening on the calls and things, they can really be, supernova coaches. And what an advantage of, and plus they listen to the calls and they hear what I have to say and how I handle objections and come up with good ideas on networking and net and, when you're all the different strategies we have.
Right.
They said it's a huge help to them in marketing, So that's what's new,
It's interesting that more and more I see more mutual fund companies trying to say to folks like us, if you partner with us, we'll provide you with some training, some coaching, some practice management, some things unrelated directly to their business. And so I think that's a smart idea, and I think that that's something that's going to become a larger and larger way in which strategic partners compete for shares of our portfolios.
Yeah, and it's smart. It's they've always done that. They've always hired me, and then they sponsor me to give a speech and all that, but there's never any serious follow-up,
Right.
There's nothing on their part other than selling funds. They use us to leverage their ability to get in to see you, but once they see you, they're really nothing but wholesalers. And our intention is to turn them into coaches. And I don't think that can do anything but leverage me.
I agree completely.
Yeah, because, everybody else would be paranoid. They'd never do that. They'd never open up their books and give all the materials to them and all that stuff. They'd be like, well, they'll just steal our stuff and go and coach. Well, that's so, and my attitude is good. I hope they do, because my mission is to improve the client experience worldwide and to improve by improving the FA experience. So if they steal my stuff and go and teach it, congratulations, We fix more lives. I don't have time to keep
exactly
what I have.
Well, and
I
say to Sean frequently, when people will say, well, Rob will show us how he does everything. And, people will say, well, don't you worry, now you're creating all kinds of competitors all over the place. And I say, I've been going out to Napa for many, many years, and I've gotten to be friends with a number of winemakers. And I know that there's basically grape juice, yeast, and sugar in wine. I have no idea how to make wine.
Right. And there's so much more to it. And I always tell you guys, Go give your speeches. Tell them what you're doing. Give them everything. Because nobody's listening anyway.
Exactly. It's too much hard work.
It's too much hard work to be good. You know, I've written 3 books, and I've given you every single idea I've ever come up with in those 3 books. So you'd think, well, I've read your book, so I know everything you know. Well, that's such a joke, because first of all, they haven't read the 3 books. Second, when they read them once, and they think that they're done. Anyway, it's so no worries about people taking advantage of us. If they do, then that's good for us. We've helped them
exactly.
be more successful.
That's a great viewpoint.
I know. It's one you get when you're older. You know, you don't have time to do all the crap.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny, Rob. I told Sean the other day that I've really been super focused as we've gone through this period to see it as an opportunity to approach it with curiosity and optimism and enthusiasm. And then I've let that start to bleed over into my personal life. And so far too often I can react angrily or judgmental, and I think you've probably heard me on the phone do that a couple times. And I've really made it my mission in life to put an end to that. And I said the other day something happened, and I got ready to react, and I didn't. And I was literally struck by, oh, my God, this is a so much more pleasant, easy, light, calm way to live. I mean, why did I ever do anything else?
I know. It's do we all have to wait till we're old to figure this out?
I did. I don't know about all, but I can speak for myself. I did.
Well, you know, I haven't seen the book, the new movie, Mr. Rogers, but I think he said his life was, his mantra was be kind, be kind, be kind. And,
right.
You know, what if the world could be kind? You know, it's such a nice term. Anyway, I think we can do that. We can, at least the 2 of us, 3 of
exactly.
us can be kind. And if we do that, then, you know, and everybody, a few more people try it, it'll be a better place.
Exactly.
So what's on your mind before we get into any structure here?
What I would say to you is on my mind is, Rob, is give you a quick update on the search for people. We dodged a bullet, we feel like. We had gone through, and I read all your stuff about interviewing and all these things, and I went into this interview. Yeah. This guy had passed background check at the firm level. He passed through the first couple management interviews that he's got to have. And so I took meticulous notes in your interviewing thing, and I had them all written down and went through them pretty systematically. And I was most proud of myself that I think if between me and the candidate, other people were speaking, that I probably spoke 20% of the time, let him speak 80% of the time. And
good.
Sean and I felt like he said all the right things. There was a really strange circumstance that he left UBS, and it was never clear to us exactly what went down. But the story that he gave was – and the story, and there's nothing in FINRA or anywhere else to dispute this, was that he had gotten into a beef with his neighbor's gardener. Apparently, both of them had used some offensive language and said some threatening things. So then when his neighbor found out about it, his neighbor called UBS's HR department, and UBS took the stance that they have a zero policy towards these things, and that they were going to terminate him. And that sounded strange to me, but,
yep.
You know, what do I know? I'm not an HR guy. I don't know anything about it. But he talked about the lessons he'd learned and how he humbled and he should have done this. And by the way, the compliance gal was one of the gals in there with us in the meeting. And she talked, and we all concurred afterward that it looked like he would be a good fit. Well, lo and behold, HR and management here were their feet on being able to offer him the salary that we needed. And literally after a week of this, and I had even a conference call with the East Coast president of the firm on the Friday, weeks ago. The next Friday, Sean came into my office. He said, Rob, I think we just got to pay the $9,000 and get the bullet and do it. I know it's nonsense. We shouldn't have to do it, but we got to get something in here. I said, all right, let's do that. So before I could get around to talking to anybody, managers came in. Bill Arima, who was our manager, came in and said, do you have a minute? I said, sure. He said, I'm going to tell you something. You're not right. Can you do with it whatever you want? But I just feel like I need to tell you. And I said, go ahead, shoot, what is it? So while he was having lunch with the guy who's the new regional and all the reorg, he told him about it. He said, what's going on with Wright's team? And he says, well, we got this guy. We're really close. He said, tell me a little bit about the guy. And he told him, and he told him the story. It just doesn't hang together. He says, well, that's easy. I know the guy who's the regional at UBS. I'll call him. So he called the UBS guy, and the guy said, I can't tell you why, but stay away, stay far away, and there's a couple more shoes to drop in that situation.
Oh.
So Bill said, what do you want to do? I said, I that's a rhetorical question. We're not going to hire him. We're not going to extend an offer. I don't need a headache. And so I learned two lessons there. I learned three, but I'll tell you the first lesson. The first lesson I learned is things are going to happen the way they're supposed to. Don't get overly emotional and push and trust that, you know, God, the universe, whoever you want to put it to, is looking out and that you don't need to control the world. And then the other thing that happened that was amazing is the difference between the guys on the PCG side, which is the private client group, and the guys here. They have such a bias towards action that when the guy got back to his office, he called all the branches and said, has anybody had a really good candidate come down the pipe that they couldn't hire or that just didn't fit or whatever, because we got to find a guy for this. So later this afternoon, we have a call with a gal who has been with Wells Fargo as a CA for 20-plus years. She wants to move up this way, and we thought about you returning to the workforce, older person, because her son and grandchildren are up here. She's from South Carolina, and they really liked her for the job they interviewed her for, but they couldn't hire her because they needed her to also serve the assistant manager, and she didn't have a 9 and a 10. So we were going to, you know, kind of stretch and, you know, I don't know if we were going to ignore any of our instincts, but I was kind of pressing down some of my instincts. And it turned out that that was not going to be a good situation. It could have been a tragic, you know, just a headache of a situation from the fire into the frying, or from the frying pan into the fire. And now I don't know that it's going to work, but at least we got a shot at talking to a gal who kind of sounds like she's sort of fit some of the things you described.
So, yeah. So one of the things that, so you think she's going to be a good fit then?
Everything everybody's told us makes it sound that way.
Yeah.
You know, she's 20 plus years. She's had to do with excellent reviews. They're terribly upset to be losing her, but she is, you know, it's her grandchildren. So, you know, that is,
right.
You know, that trumps everything. But, you know, the other thing that we've decided in all this is, Rob, Sean and I were talking one evening and said, you know, the thing that really has ever made me want to jump out of a window or him jump out of a window or, frankly, choke each other has been personnel and staff and people. It's never the market. It's rarely the clients. And it's rarely conflicts between us. It's other people. So one of the things that we're going to attempt to do is to bring a really top-flight CA in here locally, but then keep one as a remote person out in Las Vegas. I think that gives us a little more bandwidth with our clients who are on the West Coast. I think we can create a little bit of cachet saying that we've got, you know, support teams here on the East Coast and the West Coast as we talk to people. And we do everything by email. You don't have to talk to them. You don't have to ask them, why are you in a bad mood today? Is everything okay? I mean, and Sean, you're the one that really has spent the time with Jill. And by the way, I think these people are pretty expert because they're long-tenured people, and this is all they do all day, and they just sit in a room with a bunch of other CAs.
Yeah, I mean, in any event, you know, whether this, you know, works out this way or not, Rob, one thing that we've, you know, fully recognized is that the efficiency levels, or I should say the deficiency levels that existed has really been improved. I think we maybe even shared this last time, but just the automation that has occurred in the last several months, just in terms of money movements for client between accounts, between, you know, checking accounts on a monthly basis to make sure all the money's there, the checks and balances that have been put in place by this remote person on the internal systems, not having to recreate, you know, the wheel.
Not having a tickler file.
It's just been, it's been fantastic. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and I had a conversation this morning with a client, and, you know, they know, look, we're short-staffed, and they asked, you know, how's everything going? And, you know, candidly, if this had happened a couple of years ago, I think it would have been disastrous. But, you know, kudos, Rob, to – well, Rob won, hire you, Rob. And then for us to be in a position to have implemented Supernova over the course of the last 3 years, there's been very little beat missed, in my opinion, you know, between – the client interaction. Because we have these, you know, scheduled appointments, we're still getting ready the same way we were. Clients aren't really missing anything. I mean, if there's something that, you know, fell through the cracks over the course of the last week or two, they've got this scheduled meeting on hand. You don't have, you know, an angry client because they know they're going to talk to you. They know you're still looking at things. And having this put in place and this having happened, again, to me, this is it could have gone a lot worse, but from a client perspective, we've received very little negative feedback at all.
That's really interesting. That's a new one on me. Okay. I've had teams remote, you know, a team meaning I've had, you know, FAs in Chicago have an FA partner in San Francisco in the Valley, you know, with the CA out there, and sort of they have a remote team, but never a remote sales assistant. That's a really, you know, good for you guys in terms of, you know, breaking new ground. Maybe you've come up with something. You know, maybe it's has a unique ability. Let me go back to the hiring thing. All right. So what I heard was one person kind of fell out of the sky and looked too good to be true. Turned out not to be. The other person came very heavily referred by a lot of people and had a well-known track record, and you could check up on them very easily. Now, let me tell you something that what I found in, you know, my 35 years of being with Merrill Lynch and managing, you know, for 25 of those years or more, what I found was my best people always came from introductions, particularly inside the firm. Okay. The next was good, high-quality introductions by people in the industry but not in the firm. Now, the only mistakes I ever made in hiring was where I did not check references. Okay?
Yeah.
So now what do I mean by check references? I don't mean ask the person to give me 3 references and then I call them. That's like an interview, right? They're only going to give you people. They're only going to say the right things in the interview, and they're only going to give you people that like them and have deep prejudice in their favor.
So yeah, it's like my client says, Doc, can you give us 3 other clients we can call? Sure.
Right. So what I want is to make independent. I mean, what would an agency do, right? FBI or CIA or whatever,
yep,
to check up on you? They wouldn't go to the people that you referred them to. They'd go to everybody else. Okay. And so what you want to do is go to the people that actually worked with them. Now, what I did was have my admin manager call their admin manager, my service manager call their service manager, and FAs that worked for that. So I'm looking for managers, right? That's what I'm interviewing for. And so I have FAs call FAs and say, what's this guy like? Well, then I'm going to get the truth, see? Now, it may have been a bad situation, so you can't believe everything you hear, but, you know, you have three or four different people checking on references, you're going to get a pretty good picture of that person. And that's what you check up on. The other thing is, I always was happy when I took them and them had themselves over for dinner. The FA or the manager over for dinner with their spouse at my house. It's a bit of a pain, but you learn so much. How do they treat their spouse? What is it like to be with them? Because they kind of let down their guard. They're like idiots. And
exactly.
So anyway, if you want to avoid situations, you're absolutely right. When it came down to it, my job was almost 100% dependent on my ability to hire. Okay.
Yep.
If I hired well, I did well. If I didn't hire well, I failed. It sounds crazy, but it's true. It's like being a, let's say that you're a general. Let's say you're Eisenhower, right? And you're going to conduct a war. I mean, you better hire the right generals. Look at Lincoln, how many people he had to go through to get the right
generals.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Every war, it's the same way. You're running a war. And you've got to hire the right generals. And if you don't, you're really going to mess it up. So anyway, I always said hire slowly, fire quickly.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so anyway, the book on teams, if you haven't read it, read it. You need it. It will reinforce everything we're talking about here. I just looked at the chapter on, five-star model. I write about it in both the multiplier and in teams. But I spend time in both books talking about hiring, but particularly the book on teams on hiring. Okay, so.
Perfect. Yeah, and you know what?
I advise your teams.
I had read that, Rob, before the interview, and I basically crafted the four or five questions that I had, and they were super open-ended and things, and I crafted them out of what you had written there and kind of what I thought you were driving at. And again, you know, it's interesting because I really did let him talk the vast majority of the time, and I didn't go into this like I have done before saying, oh, my God, I've got to get this done. I got to close this guy.
Right. You close him like you close business, and it's not the same, right?
Right, exactly. And I kept saying to myself, I actually wrote at the top of the page of my notes, be closed, don't close.
Good. Yeah, because you're a salesman. I mean, you're going to close. You're going to sell yourself and the firm and your team and everything else 90% of the time and then ask for the order and then not know what the hell you bought, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, good experience. Very good experience. And here's the problem, Rob. You guys don't do this every day, all day, okay? That's what I
exactly.
did. Every day, all day, hired FAs, hired managers. That's all I did. So, you get pretty damn good at it after a while. And you figure out, the better I source, the better my people. You know, so I became very good at sourcing.
Exactly. Well, you know, and the thing is that this is also, I think, this entire experience of needing to come in here and dig in and do all of this stuff ourselves. And, you know, Sean hasn't so much moved up a learning curve as he's just gotten back to doing things he hadn't done for a while or hadn't done as deeply, where I've actually had to go through a learning curve and a learning process and doing all those things. I feel, you know, remarkably more qualified to understand, to lead, and to watch and to monitor than I was prior to this, because I'd just been away from it so long. I just hadn't done it in forever. And I feel like I have a better handle on the practice, our strengths, our, you know, where we've got to improve and all those things than I have had in years and years. And, you know, Sean and I talked about this, Rob, and you and I talked about this, about how previously I just felt like so lost and disconnected in things, and I now understand why that is.
Yep. Okay. Fundamentals. I thought we'd get back to some fundamentals. How does that sound?
Perfect.
Okay. So where are we going to end the year in terms of assets and production?
We'll end the year at 3.986.
Okay. He says with authority.
And Rob, our target had been 4 million, as you might recall.
Yep. That's fine. Okay. Goals for the new year, 2020.
So, I want to break that down for you in two ways. And so let us just take a step, Rob, and share with you some really very material changes in the structure that we're going to operate in now. So they identified a handful of FAs early on, and they're now going through the process certifying, how, whatever you want to call it, and the next group. But they've created now what they refer to as the Private Wealth FA, PWFA program.
Right.
So no, those are clients, they're going to be kind of focused on the $5 million and up space.
Yep.
You guys had a program similar to that at Merrill. I forget what it was called, but
yeah, we call Merrill, it Private Bankers.
Right. Okay. And then at Smith Barney, I think it's, you know, their Greystone group. So
right.
What
and
that's
they also at UBS, they're private wealth advisors.
Gotcha. So we've been chosen to move into that role. So that's going to do a couple of things. I think it's going to give us access to support. I think it's going to do a lot of very positive things. But the one thing that is going to happen is that they're going to move us, it looks like, the rumor is, and what I'm being told, and, you know, managers, this is the kind of thing that leadership wants to roll out. So managers are kind of telling us without telling us, is that they're going to pretty materially change our comp plan. So they're going to move our grid up. But we've got to be deriving more than 75% of our income, Sean, from accounts over $2.5 million. And, you know, anything that's kind of, you know, below a million or so pretty much just has to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been lobbying for a while to be able to do that next big cleanup, and nobody here wanted to let us do it. Well, now it's going to be foisted upon us. And so the reason I make that distinction is to let you know, AUM, we're probably going to have to offboard 30 to 40 million.
Yeah.
30 to 40 million between now and the end of the year. So right now our AUM is at 650.
Yep.
Our AUM right now, Rob, is at 650. It's going to go back down closer to 600 when we start 1-1.
Okay.
So my objective,
with no material impact to the ROA of the practice,
right?
You know, I would say less than $50,000 of production.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, I was gonna say I don't want to hear that you're gonna do less business.
No.
Oh no! I think quite to the contrary, that frees us up to do the things that we want to do. So one of the things that
what they're saying is we want you to become real supernova advisors.
Absolutely, positively. And so
decrease the body count even more.
And I have a strategy that I'd like to share with you and walk through with you, which is effectively the first thing that I'm going to do is do you have that spreadsheet that the wealth WHELTH spreadsheet? So what I've done, Rob, is I've gone through and built a spreadsheet because the first thing that I think we've got to do is, and this goes back to your thing about, you know, a complete plan, a total plan, so on and so forth, or you guys just, you know, playing grab ass with these people, is that I've built a spreadsheet. I kind of took this off of the things you had talked about, and I built a spreadsheet out of, I think you got to go over, of all of our clients, and I categorized them in a couple of different ways. The first way that I categorized them was as a advocate. Well, here's the first categorization I did. I categorized wealth, accumulation, preservation, distribution. So wealth is you've got so much money, you're never going to spend it all. And so that's not the primary driver of what we're working on. We don't have to think about really cash flows and those things because – nobody could screw it up. The next one is the accumulator is the client who is either currently in an accumulation mode, or we do have clients who will pretty much stay in the accumulation mode, but they won't quite get to the wealth mode. So I'll give you the example of this. We've got a couple of new clients, we just brought them in this year. They've got $6 million, $7 million bucks, but they were both docs in the Army, so they've got really nice military pensions. And they both worked outside of the Army long enough that they maxed out Social Security, so they've got that. And I think Mary even has a pension
pensions.
And Mary has a disability pension. She got injured while she was in the Army. So their required cash off of $7 million bucks is maybe 50 to 70, 80 grand a year. So they're going to stay in an accumulation mode, but they'll never reach 20 or 30 or 40 million.
Right.
The final people are those folks that are in the preservation mode. And what I mean by those folks are, listen, you've got enough money to retire. You planned well. Everything's A-OK. And you're going to always be able to maintain your lifestyle and do those things. But their net worth is not going to materially change. I mean, it's going to be an inflation-adjusted net worth, less the distributions, roughly what they are at right now.
Yep.
And then the final person is the distribution person, which is you're going to run out of money. The only question is, that was the first cut that I made. Then the next cut that I made was I used your phraseology and I said advocate. The next one I created is I created an ideal client, but I created two ideals. I created what I just call a straight ideal client, and then I create what I refer to as an emerging ideal. The emerging ideal is a lawyer with $1.5 million now. He's on fast track at a big firm like Skett, which means he's making $1.5 million, $2 million now. He's going to max out between, you know, 5 and 9. And so he will ultimately become the next, you know, Steve Sunshine, who's got $25 million with us, or Mark Mazo, who's got $30 million with us. So thinking about, you know, continuing to grow the book in the next generation. Then I've got customers. Customers are people that either because of their lack of follow-through or my lack of follow-through or whatever, we do business with them, but I don't yet view them as a full client. They don't take all of our advice. They're not fully planned. They're not into a discretionary model. A variety of reasons that they may be there. And then the final thing I have is the transactor. I don't have a relationship with you. I correspond with you. We transact business now and again. And in the most case, I really don't want to have a relationship with you. The next thing I then did, Rob, is I then created a sheet, a column, which I called Estimated Projected Lifetime Value at Current AUM / Revenue Level. So I just took the revenues levels. I didn't increase them or anything. I just said, over the next 5 years, what is the value of this client? Because I think that helps me kind of prioritize and look at those things. So, you know, a top client, I think, is minimally going to pay us $9 million over the next 5 years. Needs a lot of attention. Then what I did is I looked at assets held away. And then the next column I had is projected asset additions in the 2019 to 2022 time frame. And what I'm doing here is I'm taking these right off of our plans. Clients say, I'm going to invest this much every year, or I'm going to retire, or I've got these deferred comp things coming in, and so on and so forth. Then the final thing that I did is our planning model gives us a range of potential outcomes in 5 years, 10 years, 15, and 20 based on the Monte Carlo system. So I had an intern go in and calculate the mean of the 50th and 75th percentile over the next 5 years and said, what does that look like? And so then the next thing that I did is I developed what I'm referring to as a relationship enhancement strategy. So I went through and said, okay, of the clients that are advocates, what are the general characteristics that they all have in common? Now what I'm going to do is go back and grade anybody who's not an advocate at what percentage they are at towards the ideal. So, you know, let's just say there's five criteria just to make it easy. If you got four of them, you're 80% of the way there. Well, that's pretty low hanging fruit. What's the next 20% I need to move them? Well, if they're at a 50%, well, then I got some more work to do. What is the next thing that I do? Then what I can do with that is I can then say, okay, let's identify the top priorities for Q1. What is the next physical step that we should take on this client to move them ahead? When are we going to execute on it, and when's the due date?
Good. Yeah, good. I want you to add a category. I want you to add that ambassador category.
Okay.
And the ambassador category is an advocate. That means somebody that will refer you but has done it in the last 12 months, in the calendar year, in the calendar year. Because you're smart enough to realize that these people, human beings, love recognition. They understand they're being manipulated, and they still love it, okay? So what you want to do is you want to recognize that group, because you're looking for things to make them move up in your pyramid, right? So how do I get a person from being an advocate to being an ambassador? You have a recognition dinner for them, just like I hope your firm has a recognition dinner for you guys, where you recognize each and every person there, each and every couple there, in the last month has brought in a client that has met your minimum, your target minimum. And they've done it in the calendar year. So just like you have to do things in the calendar year to be in your recognition club, they have to do that. Now you take them for a nice dinner cruise on the Potomac, okay? Or whatever.
Yep.
You do something really nice every year for them that. It's not a lot of trouble, but it's very nice. Meaning, you know, you get it catered, you buy the ship, you know, you buy the whatever, and you take them out there, and they, you know, they dress up a little, wear a little, you know, the girls wear cocktail dresses, look nice, and everybody has a good time.
Gotcha. Good.
If it's two couples to start with, it's two couples. If it's and it'll grow. You'll have 30 couples on there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that because I couldn't remember the ambassador. I remember advocate was somebody who has referred business to us. And so, good. I'll do that.
And so you make sure that they know that this goes on every year and that they're close. You know, we got to close this guy this year.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't want to have to call you up and say, hey, Ralph, you can take that dinner off your calendar.
Right. I'm sorry you didn't make it this year. I love you, but it's tough.
And the thing that's been interesting about this exercise, the thing that's been really interesting about this exercise is, Rob, is that I've only got 50% of the clients done. It looks to me like between 2020 and 2022, so over the next 2 years, we know where there's $55.5 million. And again, this is half the clients.
Right. No. This isn't a big surprise to me. Nobody really maps. And that's what you're doing. You're mapping your practice. Nobody
right.
maps practice properly. And then has a plan for each client. If you work for me, I would have a plan for you to get. I had a plan for every FA on where they were going to go and how they were going to go there, okay, as their
right.
manager. And that's all you're doing. You know, I wanted by certain date to have five million dollar producers. By this date, I wanted this many million, this many two and a half, this many five, this many. And then I put each FA in a category and said, you're this guy. You're going to do 5 million. Now, then I'd meet with them and I'd tell them the good news.
Exactly.
Right? And then I'd hold
yeah.
them to it. And guess what? They did it. They did it. And they did it because I was on their ass and they loved it. Accountability is the key to success. Whether it's your own personal accountability, your teammates' accountability, your wife's accountability, your boss's accountability, your own, however you do it, if the accountability isn't there, it doesn't happen. Great coaches
yeah.
hold their teams accountable. You've got to build that in. So it's just freaking relentless.
Perfect. Rob, one thing that I've struggled with, and I don't know how to build it in, and I didn't know if I even needed to, and it's one of the things I'd love your thoughts on, is profitability.
Well, yeah, it's important. I mean, profitability to me is being smart. All right? Profitability was never about being a number cruncher. Profitability was about being a smart leader, being a smart manager, and managing for profitability, meaning I would spend money, but I'd spend it where I got a good return. I didn't spend it where – and so I would skimp where I got bad returns. Right? So I'd load up FAs that weren't growing, you know, so I could put my best teams one-on-one or two-on-one with two sales assistants because they were going to grow compared to the – and I thought of them as, you know, growth companies versus utilities. I loved them. You need utilities. They pay the bills, but you don't need to feed them. You don't use much capital for them. You minimize the capital requirements. And so that's what you want to do. You want to spend your money on your ambassadors. You want to spend your money on your teammates that are growing and leveraging your practice. Now, you don't want extra people. You want highly profitable, highly professional, highly productive people. One person can do the job of two or three done right.
Well, we've seen that with Jill. I mean, You know, we always thought Michael was great, and compared to her, Michael was mediocre at best.
And that's what you discover, you know, and once you discover it, you become absolutely committed to having the best, and you'll pay more for the best because it doesn't cost you that much more, and you get twice as much production or three times. That's what I mean by profitability.
How would you look at profitability of clients where we've got an ROA? We took over some accounts where guys were going to leave the firm. The ROAs weren't very good because I think what happened is that when the guys were on the ropes, they just started cutting fees. So we've got those. And then some of these guys take huge amounts of time. I mean, you know, some of our clients, we've got clients, you know, who pay us $100,000 a year that we do the monthly calls. And, you know, it's hard to get them to meet with us twice a year. And if we said we want to go to dinner or lunch, that's really tough to get them to do. We got other clients who their ROA isn't so great or this or that, but we're on the phone with them twice a month because in between every call, they want to call and talk about this stock or that stock or this idea or that idea, or Jim Cramer said this or that. Do we worry about that yet, or do we just drive on with growing the business?
No, somebody said to me, how do I stop interruptions? I said, very simply, you are in an appointment all the time. You're busy, okay? And that's why you do the 12-4-2s, unless it's an emergency or it's market-related. And so your team takes care of issues having to do with issues. But you, as a surgeon, are in surgery all the time. You can't chat about BS. Now, if you are friends with somebody and you enjoy talking about stocks, God bless you. Have fun. But make it in your downtime, not in your productive time.
Yep.
Okay? So, you know, if you have to go to the West Coast 4 times a year to see somebody, that costs money. They got to pay for that. So they pay. You can pay in 2 ways. Remember that always. You can pay for it by us charging you a fee, or you can refer people. If you refer 3 other people to pay you what you pay, then you're a great profitable individual. And I would tell people that. You know, I told Mr. Derby. He liked to call every day and talk about the market. And I said, Mr. Derby, we've invested all of your money. We've traded everything that I think we should have traded. So if we're going to keep doing this, you have to give me some more introductions. And so he would.
Right.
You know, because he wanted
to
talk. Right. And I was not – you know, that was 1973, okay? So this is not new. This is not new stuff, right?
Time-tested.
Right. I mean, I was just, you know, I loved him. He was terrific, and he was fun. But I couldn't afford him unless he gave me more business from somebody else. He'd give me more of his own business. And I didn't want to trade his account anymore. He was a good guy. So that's your answer,
exactly.
Okay?
Okay.
So it's a training issue. I mean, Rob, I get you, Rick, you and Rick mixed up. my brother's Rick. It's a training issue. So make sure that you're training your clients. So when they're calling, if you don't want them to call and they insist on talking to you, you just keep explaining to them how you work and why you're doing what you're doing. Why do we do Supernova? How does it work? Why do you keep a folder? Why do you write things into the folder and then send them to me for your agenda for the monthly call? That's why, right? We're trying
exactly.
to be productive, okay? So make sure, Rob, it's a training issue.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, and I haven't done that. I've just complained about it to Sean.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, you're changing behaviors. So how long did it take us to change your behavior and Sean's behavior?
A long time.
You were
3 years.
Yeah, it just takes. It takes time. It takes, and you get it. And it's like, you know, you gradually peel the onion back, and you keep peeling and peeling. And pretty soon you get it. You see it. You know, it doesn't all happen at once. So you need to be patient. I need to be patient. But we have to be persistent. We can't accept behavior that's incongruent with our plan.
Right.
Okay? So we're
that's
over
really
time.
Helpful.
Yeah, thanks. Good. Well, listen, remember I told you, and I want you to do this seriously, is listen to my books. Because, look, the reality is, nobody gets it the first time. You don't even get it the fourth time. You get it the sixth or seventh time you hear it. Some things you pick up right away and you click. But it's like the ambassador thing. You know, you hear it, it's a good idea, but what did he say? I forget what the ambassador was. So listen to the Supernova Multiplier, you know, on the way to work, on the way home from work, both of you. Listen to each chapter once a day for 5 days, and then move to the next chapter, and then move to the next chapter, and then talk about
it. Okay, that's your way.
Yeah, and you guys talk about
it. I like that.
Talk about it every week.
That redundancy and repetitiveness in a short period is much better than listening to it all the way through because then by the time I'm done, I'm going back to chapter one. It's 6 days later. I'm like, but listening to it once a day for 5 days is a really that's smart. I like that. I'll do that.
Yeah, I mean that's how Success Motivation Institute taught me how to learn, you know, basic goal setting. Listen to each chapter once a day for 5 days, and then move on. It was very, very helpful, very helpful. And that's how people learn. So they just plug into how people actually learn. But you need to talk about it and then put it into action. So part of your weekly meeting is, you know, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, chapter four. And then, you know, move on. And then do the book on teams because they're different. Some things repeat, but most things, you know, are different. Okay?
Perfect.
That way you stay in touch when we're not talking every week. So this way, you know, you're listening every week and learning every week. So you become the experts on Supernova and running a practice. That's what Supernova is. And
exactly.
I'm excited for you. I'm excited on the PWA thing. It's going to be terrific. I've helped FAs move from FA to PWA and so forth. And I've coached PWAs, biggest ones in the country. And there's no difference. It's just, you know, bigger numbers. You know, it's a little more focused. They're good goal setters. They're very good at goal setting. They're good at everything they do. I would guess that's just the difference. They're just really good at every single part of what we do. There isn't like, oh, they have this special sauce. No. They're just really good at everything. Okay.
Hey, Robin, along those lines, yesterday we were in a meeting with the guy who's going to be running this region, and he's going to go basically from kind of the D.C. area up through Baltimore, up into Delaware, and then he doesn't take in Philly, I don't think. Maybe he does, but Philly or Pennsylvania, and then all the way over to Pittsburgh. And he's a good guy. I've known him for about 15 years. And I told him that I thought that if he did a call with all of us, that we could all benefit from you hopping on the call, talking a little bit, because I knew you had done the private wealth thing, and talking a little bit about Supernova and this and that. And, you know, it might create an opportunity for you to get some of these guys as clients. So when that comes up, let me introduce you. If I introduce you and Josh Ritz, that's who he is. He's the new wealth manager in this area. And, you know, these guys are all talking because there's only, you know, there's only going to be 200-300 of these guys in the whole country. There's like 100 of us now. So, you know, if we could help you get in there, I know how material it's been to our practice, and I'd like everybody else to benefit from your work as well.
Well, and, you know, what I teach is what you're doing. I mean, what they're doing with PWA. I mean, that's what they're attempting to do, and they want compliance to it. and we give them plan, process, and rituals in order to get there. Otherwise, they just tell them to segment. And then it's like, great, we segmented. Now what? You know, how do we serve our clients better? How do we grow? How do we do this? So yeah, I'm happy to. And keep in mind that I have a nice relationship with Touchstone. If they, you know, they need some sponsorship, which, you know, sometimes even the PWAs, their meetings, they have sponsors. So I hate to see it, but if they're looking for it, they're a pretty good group to talk to now. And I can make those introductions if you need them.
Perfect. Well, I'll connect you and Josh sometime in the next week or so. And he was pretty excited when I told him. He goes, oh, yeah, that guy who wrote the book, you use one of his consultants? I said, no, we talked to Rob. He said, the guy who wrote the book? I said, yeah, every month. He said, oh, my God, yeah, I'd love to do that. So.
Okay, what's his name, Josh?
Ritz, like the Ritz-Carlton.
Perfect. Great name for this.
Exactly.
Okay. Terrific. Hey, thanks. I appreciate the introduction and look forward to doing some business. Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for all your help.
All right. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye now.